Kyle, what did I just watch?
I'm the same thing as me, and this is oh boy, this is like worse than like high school gen ed.
Pretty sure my mother doesn't listen to the podcast because I don't think she supports my artistic endeavors. I
My
kid.
mom does, and I'm
Yeah, I was gonna
really
say, your mom does.
I'm gonna tell her, Mary Fran, lay off this
Yeah,
one.
maybe skip this
Skip
week.
this
Because
episode.
we can't discuss this episode without getting vulgar.
Yeah, adult words were used in Boogie Nights.
No, this one. Woo.
This takes it to a vulgar level, but I mean, in a. You'll see.
Consider yourself warned.
Iggy Pop! Amen! Let it rot! I'm a fucking idiot.
Red meat, we crave sustenance.
I'm an artist.
Hello, my name is Jimmy Cody.
Why don't you have some fun?
Fun!
Tommy.
It's a pain thing.
Whoever she is, I'm gonna find her and I'm gonna hurt her.
I've spent the past 3 years learning Finnish!
I'm always home, I'm uncool.
This is a process of dehypnotization.
Shut up!
Hi, Hoff fans. Welcome again to this edition of the PS I Love Hoffman podcast, our love letter to the remarkable career of the late, great Philip Zimmer Hoffman. I'm Brian Rodriguez.
And I'm Kyle Reinfried.
We're always home, we're always uncool, and we're always ready to talk great movies. Today, we'll be chatting about an interesting film.
That's a nice or an easy way of putting it.
Yeah,
Happiness.
Yes, happiness. And we got a pretty cool guest on today.
Yes, we have Anne Paz. I've known Anne for quite some time, at least 10 years.
Over 10 years.
Over 10 years.
Yeah.
Isn't it weird to know someone for 10 years?
Yeah.
Or like
well,
a
to
decade.
Recognize that it's been like 10 years.
Yeah. Like.
And we can celebrate like our friendship anniversary or anything like that.
Aww.
But
yes, I'm meeting Anne for the first time, so nice to meet you, Anne.
Nice to meet you as well.
Yeah, I mean, we met because you were, what's the proper title, an adjunct professor at Ramapo?
Yeah.
Is that, yeah, my alma mater, Ramapo College.
Busting everybody's chops.
No, you were one of the few, like, great professors that actually gave, you know, versus, oh, that's, you know, that's good. Like, he gave your, you know, you said, no, that's not good or that's good. You know, that's the way you learn.
Definitely always give my opinion. I'm not going to lie.
Well, that's good. We like opinions here. I mean,
yes,
this is a
film
that,
that
yes,
needs
opinions. This isn't like a blah. We've done some movies where we're just like kind of trying to formulate an opinion because it was kind of boring.
Yeah.
This is like a film that needs an opinion.
And it, I mean, it's got plenty of its own opinions, I think, or it's
that's
same,
fair to
same
say.
A lot
that's
of
fair
things.
To say.
Has everyone here seen it before?
So, I'd only watched the Philip Zimmer Hoffman clips because
okay.
when everyone had talked to me about Happiness, and for some reason I had avoided it. Now I know why, and not because it's bad, because just probably didn't want to watch this in front of my family. But I had just seen his clips. Like when we started doing this, I went on YouTube and watched his clips, and I was like, "Wow, this must be the most vulgar moment of the movie." Like,
nope.
this must be like,
it's
wow,
tip
like,
of the iceberg.
No, yeah. Not even close. So when I sat down and watched it now, I'm like, oh my god, this. So yeah, this was a fresh experience for me.
And well, I mean,
well,
Anne,
clearly.
Like, well, yeah, I mean, this is again a situation where when we started looking for guests, you were one of the first people I contacted, and you said, well, first you went Twister, but we already had someone on Twister, so I apologize for
there
that.
There was a line for Twister.
I can imagine.
And back in the early stages, someone just said, like, no, we need to do Twister together. But yeah, then the next one you said was Happiness. So
Happiness.
You
I,
yeah.
You know, Happiness, I was thinking about it because I rewatched it this past weekend, and like we were talking about before this started, it's very difficult to find it online.
Yeah, most of these films, okay, at the beginning, yeah, we had to rent stuff and look up stuff on weird Polish websites, but but since, I mean, what, the last like 10 films have been easy to find, at least.
Yeah, pretty easy to find.
At
yeah.
least we could rent them on Amazon.
Yeah,
and oh crap, we're paying $3.99, whatever, it's on my girlfriend's Amazon account. I'll Venmo her at the end of the month, whatever. But I figured this was going to be on Amazon. Nope.
No, not Amazon, not iTunes.
No, not
not like playing on a cable.
Apparently,
station.
It was on Crackle once.
Really?
So I thought, I mean, I'd never watched Crackle before. Sorry, Crackle fans.
Yeah.
But I downloaded Crackle to try to get it.
No. I feel like I found an outdated link to Netflix, which I could be wrong. It could just be titles related to Happiness, but that got me hopeful. And then I ended up going down the porn rabbit hole, basically to
yeah
to pop watch up it. City.
I kept getting Pursuit of Happiness, which is the 180 of this movie with
that's fair.
Will Smith and Jaden Smith.
Jaden Smith, your favorite tandem.
Yes,
but great. This After was Earth. You know, it was interesting. This movie was, I think, one of the first movies that I saw when I moved to New York, because it was what, like 1998, and I
98,
distinctly remember watching it at Film Forum.
That's cool.
Yeah, which is super cool. So it brought back a lot of, you know, I mean, it's like any movie you've seen a long time ago. You're like, oh, I remember that, I remember. But then I also remember kind of the experience of sitting in a movie theater and experiencing it, you know, viscerally that way. Because
I would have been weirded out in a movie theater watching.
It's one of those things. But no, so I've seen it twice in full. But it was glad to, you know, that's why it stuck with me. I mean, his performance was one of those things where, you know, Happiness was first and foremost.
So. Definitely. Yeah, and for me, I thought that I had seen it in full, but I clearly not, because there's plenty of things that
your text reactions.
Yeah.
Like, that's why I asked you, Kyle, I thought you'd seen this before, because...
No, I clearly had missed them because you don't. Once you see this movie, you're not going to forget it.
You can't unsee it, so I knew you had it.
There's a lot of visuals.
Yes, a lot of visuals.
Every from audio to visual.
We've discussed this privately, like, the language of this podcast and, like, what to say and not to say and the vulgarity.
I saw Boogie Nights with the whole... Like, that was going to be, like, in my head, and I forgot about...
Boogie Nights is Fraggle Rock compared to this film. It really is. We're entering Eureka's castle, like, just Jim Henson Workshop's crap compared...
Yeah, Marky Mark's prosthetic dick is a Muppet.
essentially, that's Animal, right? Because this is, like, another level here. Oh, my God. I have not seen, like, a feature film... That it did this.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that's necessarily a bad thing. Like, from a writer's perspective, I think this is an amazingly written film.
Yeah, this falls into your wheelhouse of what you like as far as...
Oh, no. And I wrote down, like, at the beginning, I'm like, wow, I love this. I love ensemble cast things. I love just that. I love, like, you know, I'm a sucker for, like, the sister story from Hannah and her sisters, or even already a brother, and, like, Chekhov stuff. I love that. But a lot of, like, little boys...
Stuff. By far, okay. The most uncomfortable is between Dylan Baker and his son. So you've got Bill and Billy, and that stuff. I mean, like, you know, Dylan Baker plays a pedophile, but even besides, like, that's horrible. But just the father, like, the discussions he would have had just with the questions his son was asking him, just made, like, very few
squirm,
things get.
Right?
Yeah, very few things get under my skin. Like, I mean, again, like, I can really separate, like, movies and just, like, real life, and it's not like this reminded me of anything, but it didn't. But, like, this incredibly uncomfortable, like, yeah.
Well, before we get ahead of ourselves, Kyle, tell the audience what this film is about. I know what this film's about, because
Happiness is about three sisters, their families, and those around them. Whether it's a therapist pedophile, a woman who desires to know what it's like to be raped, a man who makes obscene phone calls, a little boy worried that he hasn't come yet, or even a woman who was raped and then killed and chopped up her rapist. In this dark, dark emphasis on dark comedy drama, these desperate people search for human connection.
Okay, good. Fair.
I wrote it well. I didn't read it well, but you know.
You're getting better at the reading, which I
Thank
like.
You.
I feel like this podcast has become like a third grade reading class as well.
Okay, I was going to say like a, you know, like public speaking 101, like collegiate level.
Okay,
but yeah.
Sorry.
No, third grade. No, it's more.
You know.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting what you're talking about, the human connections, because I feel like after watching something like this, you're kind of grasping, like, what the fuck did I just watch? Do you know what I mean? And how do I make sense of those feelings? And how do I kind of wrap my head around it? And one of the things that I read, or one of the reviews, because I was going back to 1998 reviews, which was great, you know. Some people hated it and then recanted. I think there was a, I don't know if it was the reviewer from Time Out or maybe New York Magazine, who actually apologized to Todd Solondz like 10 years later.
Wow.
But wow, somebody had written, you know, that all of these characters are bound by their inability to form base human connections, and that Todd Solondz basically looks into how that manifests itself behaviorally, which I thought was really interesting, you know? And then there's a question of whether or not that they're the exception or they're the norm. And I think that's what makes it so kind of skin crawling, is that you look at these people and you're like, they're kind of the norm. They're not the exception to the rule.
Yeah, I mean, you have certain characters that, you know, it's, they're not crazy far-fetched, like Trish, Bill's wife.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, she's just in kind of like a loveless marriage, you know, delusional, you know, kind of relationship with Bill. And then even, I mean, let's start from their family, her parents, which, by the way, I'm calling him the rest of the episode. It's Jackie Treehorn, the actor that played Jackie Treehorn in Big Lebowski our last episode. So
which
I was really excited.
Lenny.
Yeah, Lenny. And then, so you got Lenny and Mona, and then they've got their three daughters, Trish, Helen, and Joy.
Yep.
So, I mean, that's just right there is a dysfunctional family. And, like, the daughters are, like, pretty screwed up in their own sense. I'd say Helen the most.
They're all screwed up. I mean, I think that Trish, I mean, here's the thing, is that are they the most screwed up from, like, can you tell they're the most screwed up, or they're actually the most fundamentally screwed up? Is somebody that wants to be raped more screwed up than somebody married to a pedophile who pretends everything is okay?
Yeah. No, that's a very good question.
It's heavy. it's heavy like that. Yeah. Kyle, why don't you go... Who plays each sister, right? Because there's...
Yeah, so you've got Jane Addams plays Joy.
And I like her. The first time I saw her was...
Father of the Bride 2?
No, it was not that.
She delivers Diane Keaton's baby.
Good to know.
You know,
Diane Keaton has a baby in that, and then the other...
And then the daughter.
Okay, yeah. That makes sense. That would be the plot of Father of the Bride 2. No, Eternal Sunshine, she's in that. And we saw that in high school. She's
Why am I blanking? What is she in that?
She's what's his name? David Cross's wife.
Oh, okay.
That's something we saw in high school.
The next thing I really know her from is she was on the HBO series Hung with Tom Jane.
Yeah, that's true. And we again another collaborator, Phyllis Mirhoff and Tom Jane.
There you go. But then
Kevin
the
Bacon
next
game, yeah.
I have is Laura
Flynn Boyle.
Laura Flynn Boyle plays Helen, and then you have Cynthia
ex of Jack Nicholson. She was in Men in Black 2.
Yeah, Twin Peaks.
Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
Ooh, revival right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wait, what? She was with Jack Nicholson?
Yeah, they used to be a couple.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Jack. And then you've got Cynthia Stevenson, who plays Trish.
And they're all great.
Yeah.
I love the sisters.
Yeah, I like their dynamics. Mm-hmm. I mean, they each, I think, have... I mean, Trish and Helen definitely, like, meet up a little bit more, like, as, like, their own little unit. But then I think they all kind of... It is very reminiscent of, like, Hannah and her sisters in that retrospect, that you've got the three sisters, and they all have their opinions. And everyone in the family feels
sorry for Joy.
Isn't
it weird that we're thinking
which is just great that her name is Joy.
Isn't it weird that we're thinking of a Woody Allen movie as a less fucked up film as what we're talking about?
Oh, I thought you were going to dive right in with pedophile, but
no.
And his ex-wife plays Mona, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Woody Allen's second wife, Louise Lasser, I think her name is.
Yeah.
Plays Mona.
Mm-hmm. Boy, connections all around.
Dropping all these knowledge bombs on me. Yeah. Oh, and I wanted to say right away, for Allen, John Lovitz, who has a small part in this movie, in like just like the first scene or whatever, he was considered for Allen. And then Jack Black again.
Interesting.
There's always a Jack Black, Phyllis Seymour Hoffman. Like, Jack Black was considered for Scotty J, like Twister. And then
what would Jack Black
came Polly, we said would, you know, be in that.
Would
role.
Jack Black be a better actor? I'm doing air quotes. If
he was given these opportunities.
He had landed these roles if Phyllis Seymour Hoffman had decided to just. He'd never got his wrestling injury and he just, like, wrestled for life, theoretically. Or would the movies have been crappier?
And
you like Jack Black.
I love Jack Black, but I think Phyllis Seymour Hoffman was just more classically trained and...
Or just a harder worker, if that makes sense.
I feel like there's not... feel free to disagree with me, but I feel like there's not the same depth to Jack Black. I feel...
100%.
That's my take.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to even think of, like, a role of his... Or, like, a... I don't know, as far as, like... Like artsy films.
Yeah, what's his
that,
most?
I guess Michel Gondry's Be Kind, Rewind, but even then he's.
But he's
playing
still
like
a, he's more Jack Black.
Yeah,
in that.
He's hired for that because he's.
Jack Black. His least like Jack
King
Black
Kong.
Role, King Kong, I would say. I too. And the other one you're gonna laugh at me is The Holiday.
I love The Holiday.
Wow.
School of Rock.
Oh,
yeah. but he's still Jack Black in School of Rock, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. Maybe Tropic Thunder, he plays kind of a different character, but whatever.
No, those are all...
the point is, it's still in the Jack Black bubble.
Yeah, Jack Black, like, 98% of the time plays Jack Black.
And we've heard so many people say this. I've even said this. Like, the first time you saw Long Game Polly, you're like, why isn't Jack Black playing this? This guy's a lot better.
Yeah.
But, like, so... Jack Black was probably... Maybe not towards a later career, but at certain points has made more money than Philip Seymour Hoffman. It's still like
yeah. I mean, Philip Seymour Hoffman, and it's not you know. He's got much more of his craft going on.
Yes, some people consider Philip Seymour Hoffman the greatest character actor of his generation. Yeah. No one would ever say that about Jack Black.
No, but.
But you know, another interesting as a side note, people also call out John Lovitz, the role that he plays in Happiness too, because it's that rare moment where he's playing a dramatic role as opposed to. Comedy, yeah. Right? I mean, it's like little, but I love, like, just to go back to your point of who's considered for the role, that's my favorite when you find out, you watch a movie, who else was passed over, who passed it up. Love that.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, I love John Lovitz. I mean, this movie starts out strong.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, just in its own right, it starts out with its music, and it's got, like, the violin or a fiddle and accordion playing. Just, like, this movie is very... as far as its comedic elements draws from, again, one of my favorite words to use, juxtaposition of its, you know, these intense visuals.
Have you seen any of this director's other work?
No. I only knew of the Welcome to Dollhouse, but I have not. But
that was his, like, first...
That was what put him on the map.
Yeah.
That's
the,
like,
one Sundance. And, yeah.
And then this one, again, like, was...
Wasn't this banned from Kong?
Yeah, it got like NC-17.
Well, it was, I think, the original distributor dropped it.
Yeah.
Yep, and then it was picked up again.
It's amazing, because this is, we always discuss Rotten Tomatoes here. I think this is like 82% in Rotten Tomatoes, which is very favorable.
Yeah, that's higher than The Big Lebowski.
It's very favorable for Philip Seymour Hoffman's career so far. But this is something that distributors are afraid of.
This is the biggest role of his that we've covered. So
yeah,
far.
So far.
I mean, but think of it. I think it's The Rape. I think it comes down to Dylan Baker and, like, the... I honestly feel like everything else could have passed for the distributor, but that... At least my understanding is that was the pedophilia.
That, and I mean... What you...
I mean, there's, like... That's a slippery slope, but...
No. I'm... Like, I mean, Dylan Baker said that he was fine with whatever happened from him taking this role.
Yeah.
But it didn't... heard that he was getting calls after, like, it didn't affect him in any way.
But okay, here's an interesting thing. I feel like this is one of the first movies that I saw Dylan Baker in, and I've never been able to see him as anything other than this character since, you know, or like I'll see him in Law and Order SVU, and I'm like, just reprising the role. So it's the type of thing where this is, I feel like he did a fantastic job.
Oh yeah.
But
it's definitely one of the, it just.
I can't see.
You can't unsee.
Yeah. Unless he were to get another role that were equally strong, you know?
When did There's Something About Mary come out? It's around this time.
Around this time.
I think it's 97, 98.
Yeah, I think it was earlier. Because
I'm just going to put it out there. There is male ejaculation in that movie.
But again, that movie...
used to a very comedic element versus twice you see it in this film.
That movie is Fantasia compared to this film.
Oh, yeah, of course. But I'm just trying to... When Anne said, like, Dylan Baker's... role was maybe, like, you know, the straw that broke the camel's hump.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think of the other things.
Oh, there were many.
Oh, there were.
Oh, but again, like...
Pick your poison.
The issue, I guess, if you want to call it an issue, is that it's children, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's...
Pedophilia is taboo.
Yeah, I mean, it's that.
We
and
see
again,
the inner workings of a child rape.
Well, one of my biggest things, again, so it's not like this film carried multiple tones. It is pretty clear. I mean, it's like a sadistic dark comedy, I mean, for the most part. I mean, it's got, you know, it's obviously...
It's clearly a comedy.
But I just had a little bit of the problems of, and I understand maybe it's trying to get into the mindset of a pedophile, but they play this like romantic music when he's looking at Johnny.
So I'm laughing, it's terrible, but it's...
But that's like, he's at this Little League game, and then all of a sudden it's just like... Like spring has sprung. Like,
but don't you feel like there's this kind of, you know, what I struggled with is just trying to find that balance between, you know, do I hate the character, or is there some kind of sympathy in like a really twisted way?
Well, that is to go then further. What I read is that a lot of people, not only that there's this pedophile character, is that they created sympathy.
Yep.
For him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is what people found to be. They're like, no, that's unforgivable. Do not do that. That is wrong. But again, just like from like that mindset, like that's, you know, one of the biggest things when you hear about these people that committed these acts. Like you hear, like, just through listening to other like medical podcasts and stuff like that, I've heard that sometimes men have had tumors.
You listen to medical podcasts?
I do.
It's amazing.
Wow.
I'll reference them later. But there's been discussions of men that have had tumors that they went to their doctors and all of a sudden they had this urge to like touch little boys or touch children in general, and they're like, I feel like I'm going insane. What has made me this way now? I've never had these urges before. And then they do like a CAT scan, they find a tumor, remove the tumor, all that's gone. It's just like, that's, I just say this because that's how crazy the brain is, and we just don't know like what these triggers are, and that sometimes the people that do these horrendous acts are victims in their own ways too. But that's just a really weird and uncomfortable thing to say in its own right, and to see that like while you're sitting there in a like 2-hour and 15-minute movie and just digesting that, and just having, it's not, and that's the other thing, it's not a movie, it's not just dissecting the pedophile, it is just a bunch,
it just
of
just happens,
but yeah, and just like a bunch of,
and you know why, and you mentioned before, terrific tone, the tone is so even in this film,
yeah,
that you're not brought out like,
this isn't like a Beautiful Mind for pedophiles, like, you know, like. But that movie, if there was a movie just about a pedophile, like we're talking, like that might have been like revered a little bit better, I feel like. I don't know, there's just a lot going on.
Well, and it's like, it's those little moments too, which I think I think that's what also makes people uncomfortable, right? Because we're all used to watching things that are sensationalized. So it's like, and then the pedophile, dun, 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 you know, and you hear about the act and then maybe you see the person, maybe you don't, but you know, that's it. It's kind of shunned away. But here you have Dylan Baker walking around, trying to, like, you know, making a tuna sandwich earnestly, checking to see if his spouse is asleep. Like, those having a heart-to-heart with a kid that if you didn't know what he was talking about, you'd be like, that's so great. He's being totally honest with his son, right?
I'm not joking. I had a tuna sandwich before I watched this movie.
No.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, I didn't remember.
I don't know.
Oh, no, man.
And then I was just like, I, like, finished eating the sandwich, and then, like, just, like, right in the beginning of the film.
You're a sandwich guy, too.
I love a sandwich.
Did it ruin tuna for you?
It's, you know, sardines. I'm gonna switch. I'm gonna lay off the tuna for a little while.
Kyle, you mentioned length.
Chicken of the sea. What?
The length of the film. Okay. Whoa. No. Is width more important?
They discussed that in the film.
They did.
They discussed that. Billy and Bill.
Did you feel like the film was too long?
Yes. I think. I did.
Is there a place where you thought it dragged?
I mean, I get that there are these tons of awkward moments and awkward silences, but there's just like sometimes that I felt like whether it was a shot or the scene just lingered a little too much. I can't, off the top of my head, I didn't write down anything specific. But.
I felt, here's the thing, structurally I understand why she was needed, but I felt like the introduction of Cameron Manheim's character, that's where I felt like it was dragging. Pedro.
Yeah,
the, like,
that whole...
It.
I thought she was going to be the sweetheart of the movie.
No.
Nope.
No sweetheart.
Now, we bring that up. I did, you know, our guy, Philip Zimmer Hoffman, I did like his angle here. But I agree. Like,
wait, you what?
I liked his arc.
Oh, okay, okay. I thought you said you liked like his strategy.
Oh, no, no, no. I did not mean it like that.
Okay, I think this is a fair question. We'll start with you, Anne. Who do you think is the most benign character? Or, you know, like, I guess the least...
fucked up?
Yeah, fucked up and just, like, you know, rude, crude character in this movie?
Well, okay, that's an interesting question. I feel like everybody's fucked up.
Yeah.
It takes a given that everybody's fucked up. So then the question is, who is honest about being fucked up?
Yeah.
You know? And I feel like actually the person that's probably the most honest about being fucked up was the cab driver, Vlad.
Yeah, I was going to say Vlad and then probably Lenny, aka Jackie Strayhorn.
Yeah.
Just because he's just like, no, and I didn't say divorce. What are you talking about? And then his whole thing is just he just kind of real. I think towards the end, it's just like, yeah, I just want to die.
Yeah.
You see him putting salt on his food, and the doctor at the beginning said no salt.
But for me, you could look at it from the outset and say, here's a guy that's seducing a student and stealing your stuff. But then she's like, what do you do? He's like, I'm a thief.
Yeah.
So what
did you do in Russia? I was thief.
I was thief. Straight up. Yeah.
Solo contractor.
Does it make you more or less fucked up if you're open and honest about being fucked up?
Yeah.
You know?
That's why this movie, it just touches that, human thing that we don't want to talk about.
It covers they seem, just from, an outside perspective of, they make it that you've got a housewife, then you've got, a telemarketer, and your retired couple. They're all people that, know people.
How many solid storylines are there here? I know they intersect, but...
I mean, you've got, let's say, the parents, right?
Yeah, going through a divorce.
Going through the divorce. Then you've got each sister, but Trish is more with Bill and, her family. Alan.
And his...
technically, if John Lovitz is right in the beginning and these guys...
Yeah,
I feel like you've got I feel like the family, those are distinct storylines, and then other characters intersect.
Yeah.
So, you've got Philip Seymour Hoffman as the linchpin between Helen and Cameron Manheim's character.
Yeah, you almost can go by I think it's easier to go by houses or locations. You got Florida.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the suburban home.
Mm-hmm.
You have the apartment building.
Yep.
And then,
maybe Joy.
You could go to, the classroom.
Yeah, I think the Joy thing is, a linchpin storyline here.
Oh, definitely.
You got Jersey.
Yeah, well, that's also, so the director...
Kyle, do you feel like Joy?
What's that?
Do you feel like Joy?
No, I never feel Joy.
That's true.
The director's from New Jersey.
Yeah.
So I felt like that was a little bit of
a
statement. Exactly. Because even Helen has one line along the lines of oh, I'm here. What did she say? I'm here in Jersey because it's because it's ironic or something like that. That's why she's in New Jersey, staying in New Jersey.
But, yeah.
You know, New Jersey's always a punchline. Yeah, shit on. Yeah, exactly.
It's not the champagne. It's crap.
I think Welcome to the Dollhouse is centered in New Jersey, too. It's maybe a theme.
This guy in Kevin Smith, New Jersey's finest filmmakers.
Mm-hmm.
But, to get back to the beginning of this film, that music starts off, and you're just like, all right. Because, that's another thing. We're definitely, by now, if you're listening to this episode, we've posted the trailer, as we usually do for each movie. And this trailer does, they didn't know how to market this movie. Because this movie...
Movie lost money.
Yeah.
It did?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
It was, it was a small budget. It was
I think it broke even.
3.5 million or 3.8?
No, it only, maybe since it's broken even.
Okay.
But the listed thing was 2.7.
Ooh.
Okay. And it's 3 mil, so whatever.
Yeah.
Not okay. Whatever, because it's something.
Well, it doesn't help that they're not streaming it anywhere. They can make more money.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, I feel like there would be a lot of people that would start it and stop it. not give people, but there were, just the fact that, yeah, it's not available to stream anywhere. I wonder if it was available to stream, right after, Philip Seymour Hoffman's death.
Interesting.
Anyone, sometimes they do that.
It was probably put up on YouTube and then taken down. That's the way I always think about it.
No, there were some I looked that up. There were some retrospective articles about it that have YouTube clips embedded in them that are no longer available. So that definitely happened.
Yeah, but getting to the story, because we have this opening scene with John Lovitz, and it's his only scene besides being in a morgue or whatever. But I just feel sorry for this character right away. But then he ends up standing up for himself. And Joy really just, gets... We see the beginning of just, her usual... what happens to her, which she kind of gets, shit on and yelled at by people. And I mean, she digs herself into this, into her like,
yeah, she's
own
the
hole.
One breaking up with him.
But
yeah.
It's like such a great, like, it sets the tone so well because it basically takes a total cliche, right? Couple at a date, things aren't working out, it's not you, it's me, except then, like, it flips it. It's like, it's yeah. you. It's you. Yeah. And then it's like, no,
yeah,
I didn't
no,
get that.
It's just you.
It's just you.
Yeah. And it's just like, I'm champagne.
Yeah, it's like it totally takes that and then carries it throughout the rest of the film, right? Everything that you think would be a cliche,
yeah,
he shows the other side.
Yeah, because then you think he's going to continue being this like vulnerable character and gives her the gift. Oh, I got this for you after our first date. And I think it wasn't like how many, like, did they say how many dates they were on at that point? Like, it didn't sound
like
it was,
four or
yeah,
something
three
like
or
that.
Four.
Yeah,
no, but he got a gift for her like after the first date, and it's like a nice ashtray, but I don't know what it was exactly. But yeah, then he goes and then he just takes it back from her, and then he has that line, you think I'm shit, I'm champagne. Like, it's just like he goes into this whole thing like, yeah, I know I'm fat, but like, I don't, like, I'm a nice guy, and this is what you could have been, a nice guy that's gonna treat you well and give you thoughtful gifts, but this isn't for you because you're a piece of shit. And it's like, wow, John Lovitz like gave a, you know, one of those performances. Mm-hmm. Like a Michael Shannon from Revolutionary Road, that he's in it for like 8 minutes but gets a Oscar nom, you know. It was a great performance by John Lovitz. And I say that because then right away we get to our main man in his first scene, and he's talking with, well, he's a patient of Bill, who's a therapist, and what, we'll play the clip, right? Does that make sense?
But whenever I see her, I just wanna, you know, I want to undress her, and I want to tie her up, and I want to pump her, pump, 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 so she screams bloody murder, and then I want to flip her ass over and pump her even more, and it's so hard that my dick shoots right through her. And that my cum squirts out of her mouth. And not that I could ever, you know, actually do that. See? She only knew how I felt. Yeah, deep down, I really cared for her, respected her, and she would love me back. Maybe. But she doesn't even know I exist. I mean, she knows I exist. I mean, we are neighbors, you know, we, you know, smile politely at each other, but I don't know, I could ever really begin to talk to her. I mean, what can I talk about? I have nothing to talk about. I'm boring. I know. I've been told before, so don't tell me it's not true, because it's a fact. I bore people. People look at me and they get bored. People listen to me and they zone out. Bored. Who is that boring person, they think? I've never before met anyone so boring. For her to see how boring I am.
Got a little no. skim of milk.
No.
Dozen eggs. One of those disposable cameras
for
the weekend.
I, no.
I can stop at the 7-Eleven on the way home.
No.
I gotta get the dry cleaning.
For trash. Nothing.
I gotta check Billy's homework. And call Mrs. Mitchell about her appointment on Tuesday. I'm gonna reschedule the dentist.
You know what I'm gonna do?
I'm gonna get the dog cleaned.
And the next time I see her, as soon as I see her, I'm just gonna tell her. I'm gonna tell her that I find her attractive.
Again, I love here how he's like, Bill is just ignoring him.
Yeah, he's thinking, he goes into that inner thoughts of groceries and.
But then again, it's like it's taking the same thing where the cliche would be a patient or the therapist and their patient, and you'd be having some heart to heart, engaging, and instead he's like, "I'm boring." And he's like,
"Yeah.
I'm going to think about groceries." So it kind of takes that cliche and turns it on its head, continuing that.
Yeah, he said, like Philip Seymour Hoffman says, like, I know I bore people. And at that moment, Bill starts going off into his own thoughts. I mean, and he's just saying, actually, Philip Seymour Hoffman's character, Alan, really, just the way he's pontificating and the words he's using really reminded me of Joaquin Phoenix's character in The Master of Freddie Quell. And just when he's doing the Rorschach tests and everything like that in that movie. And it's just, he just gets very, just telling what he wants. He's talking about Helen, who's his neighbor, and what he wants to do.
I'm sure you read that, because I know you read the trivia, but did you see that Philip Seymour Hoffman based this on, this fundamentalist Christian guy, Ralph Reed?
Yeah, Ralph Reed. He was the founder of the Christian Coalition. He's a Republican politician.
And the name is Skip. I'm blanking on the name, but it's in a it's that documentary, that political documentary that we'll do on this podcast.
Oh, the one that Philip Seymour Hoffman made for the Gore.
Yeah, and that's when he meets him. He meets him at an event.
Yeah,
and Ralph Reed tells him.
Yeah.
That Happiness is his favorite film.
So this character that Philip Seymour Hoffman bases Alan off of, this Christian coalition.
Yeah, and he has no idea it's based off him, because again, there's no indication of that. He's not a preacher in the film.
But he comes up to Philip Seymour Hoffman and says, "Oh, my favorite film is Happiness."
That's great amazing. Happiness. I've seen the clip. He sees Ralph Reed and he's like, "I got to talk to him because I base this character on Happiness off of him." So he introduces himself and he's like, "Oh, I know you. I'm a big fan. I love the film Happiness," which is just amazing.
That's wild.
That's like Republican Birdcage territory.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome.
You recognize something in him.
Yeah, that's... Oof.
Because maybe like in some circles, Ralph Reed's like a household name, but not really, This is like some random kind of guy that fills me wrong.
But here's the thing. Would you look... I mean, maybe it's just a difference in terminology, but would you look at any of those characters and be like, that is my absolute favorite character, or wow, that was kind of a disturbing performance or a powerful performance? I guess even though everybody does a star turn, other than Marla Maples, actually, who I can say, that was fucking amazing.
Yeah.
She, her turn as the real estate agent was unbelievable. But I wouldn't look at any of those characters and say, that was my absolute favorite character. It's like, that was powerful. It's kind of the terminology when you describe somebody that is a little bit disturbing in a film, it's hard to wholeheartedly embrace it. It's just interesting that he used that kind of language, because...
Yeah, to also to declare this, that, I mean... So at that point, he had Twister and Boogie Nights, and, I don't know, he was in Scent of a Woman. Maybe people didn't recognize him from Scent of a Woman. But it's just really, that this guy, that this politician... I don't know, I would just, as a politician, I wouldn't choose to make
broadcast that was my favorite.
Yeah, even in just, like, a... talking.
The Party's Over, is that?
Yeah, The Party's Over. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Party's Over. That's the name of the documentary. Which we'll definitely, we're gonna cover.
Yeah, we are covering.
We're going to make an exception. We usually just do narrative films, but we are going to...
It is a feature in terms of length.
Yeah, it's a feature film, and Philip Seymour Hoffman is very involved
with
in
it. Length, are we still discussing this?
No.
Trying to make you creeped out.
Is it widescreen? Is it?
I don't know. We'll have to see.
But yeah, the Party's Over. That's the name.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's just, again, just in a public forum. I'm just very surprised a politician went to go and, say, Happiness is my favorite movie. That's just.
Better Philip Seymour Hoffman than Dylan Baker,
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then you were really great versus Dylan Baker. That would just be like digging yourself a hole.
I mean, we haven't mentioned the Marla Maples. I mean, you said her, but the whole. I mean, this is a former ex-wife of Donald Trump, our president.
Oh, she was amazing
film.
In it.
And she's great. This is amazing. I love it. I mean, it's just she's very, very good at that role.
Of the
real estate.
Yeah, real estate down in
divorce is the best thing that happened to me. that line when she's like, "Divorce is the best thing that ever happened to me."
Yeah,
I love that. And I can't remember exactly what she said, but when she's showing her the place and they're walking up the stairs and they just see the very like old lady with the walker and she's like, "Oh, that doesn't represent most of our clientele here or whatever, you know."
That's the exception.
Residents here.
I watched this and I'm like, I wish Marla Maples acted more.
Yeah.
Like, is she really acting? I feel like she's just playing herself.
No, yeah, she, yeah.
But okay,
was just featured in more.
Yes, fair. I wish she was featured in more things because it's perfect. And it's just perfect for even now, you know?
Yeah, well, that's like a timeless character. It's just the schmooze and booze and just, like, yeah, I love it.
Divorce, I feel like the real Marla Maples is doing that right now, though.
Yeah, divorce to the president was the best thing that ever happened.
I don't know.
I think that's a good call. She'd make a great first lady.
Well, we can discuss that on our First Ladies podcast
every
Tuesday. I'm just joking.
That'd be a fun podcast.
Darling Madison.
I mean, so coming from the scene with Bill and Alan and, you know, therapy, right away we get Philip Seymour Hoffman going to his apartment building. We see Helen outside. And actually, just a little fun fact, the guy that greets her is Todd, the director. Just says, like, hello, Miss, what's their last name? Jordan? Yeah.
Jordan.
Hello, Miss Jordan. And that's his little... So at first when she said... So when she says Pedro, I'm just like, oh, was that the director? Like, that would just be... Like, I started laughing, thinking the director had himself killed. Like, that's a fun territory to get into. But, so Helen walks in. And I almost feel like, did you think that Philip Seymour Hoffman was just, like, waiting there? Just, like, maybe he knows what time she usually gets back? Because he's just kind of standing there, and then she goes up and presses the button. I know that's, you know, sometimes even just in, a whole, when you're in a rush or when you just want to get home or wherever, and even if you see the button lit, you just go up and you press it anyway. But I just thought, like, maybe that's something, you know...
Wouldn't
be the weirdest thing
that
this character does. So, yeah, there's just, I mean, just to talk more about his character, so we just covered the Big Lebowski and Brandt, and he wears those suits and has the glasses. I almost felt like this was, like, a perverted version of that character that, like, if he just, like, broke down, this is what Brandt does on the side. But I mean, from that moment with talking to Bill and his therapist, the way he's just slouched, and we're just getting that full, very, you know, baritone, bassy Philip Seymour Hoffman talk, and he's wearing those, like, you know, the suit's, like, a little too big, and it's just that, like, the brownish color, and he's just such a sad sack, and he just brings, like, I don't know, he just...
What I love is just their chemistry or lack of chemistry, just that it's so uncomfortable. I mean, there's so many uncomfortable moments in the film.
Oh, yeah.
And that elevator ride.
Yeah. Just quiet ride up.
So uncomfortable. And I think one of the things that's great about this film, and this is a great scene to illustrate it, is that everybody can identify with the kind of the situations, whether or not the specifics, not necessarily,
sure,
but the
situation.
Yeah, the situation where everybody's been in an elevator.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean, that scene has been in plenty of movies.
Right?
But that awkward elevator ride.
I mean, at least once a week at work, right?
Yeah. Oh, of course.
You're stuck with the person, you hit every floor, and it's like, oh, you're not hey, great weather outside. Hey, you know.
Exactly, yeah.
And so I think that you look at that, and yet you've just come out of therapy with him, and so
talking
just
about this woman.
Yeah, and they could not be, the two, like, his fantasy and the reality could not be farther apart, you know. And so it just makes that scene so much better. The fact that, like, A, we know what he's thinking, and then B, you can identify it to it in some way, shape, form, you know.
Definitely. And I mean, and they get off the elevator, and they live right next to one another. He just goes, see ya, and then goes inside, and then pretty much starts his ritual, that end of taking a shower and then just picking up the phone book, and he crosses out names that he's already called, or ones that I guess maybe they're like male voices.
So good.
Yeah. And yeah,
and what does he do?
Well, he tries to pretty much, I mean, ask them what they're wearing and what they're doing and if they're pleasuring themselves. And that's then I'm like, oh, okay. I mean, then this is definitely, I had seen all of his scenes, and I don't know, I guess I just, in my own little world, I lived like this, maybe like hour-long movie of happiness. Like, I don't know if I have like repressed like images of this movie somewhere deep inside. Like, I definitely didn't see it a long time ago. I'd say probably at, like, you know, like college era, because that's when I really started appreciating Philip Seymour Hoffman. And by like time of college, like, you could actually search movie clips on YouTube and stuff like that. But yeah, I guess I don't know. I either don't remember or repressed, or but I mean, I remember Philip Seymour Hoffman, and this was just, I mean, just gets rude and crude on the phone, and I mean, we might as well play a little clip from that too.
Oh, fuck you so hard. Let me come in your ears. Fuck you. You. Oh, fuck you. I'll fuck you. Really hard. Hello? Hello, is this Claire?
Yeah.
I don't know what you want me to say about that.
I mean, he's sitting there in his underwear. That's it. Just has the phone book, crosses out the names. Just, and then get, you know, gets disgusted right away with when it's a man's voice, and then when a woman, I guess, just questions him right off the bat, which is something that really, like, Joy's really weird on the phone later when they speak, just as far as her being open and, like, vulnerable. I mean, she, you know, she thinks that it's somebody else, but even still the questions that this person that she's being set up
I
by
love that. He's like, what are you wearing? Oh, now? What am I wearing now?
Well, no, first it's like, what am I going to wear on the date?
Yeah.
But yeah, but this woman right away says, who is this? Or, you know, like, you know, so ask that question, and he just decides to hang up.
But that's because, I mean, his character, and he establishes it from the beginning, he has such low self-esteem, you know? It's like he can't even hide behind the mask of anonymity of the telephone, do you know what I mean? As long as nobody's saying anything, it's like when he calls Laura Flynn Boyle from work, you know?
Yeah.
And he manages to get it all out.
Yeah,
and then as soon as she calls him back, he's like, no.
Yeah.
No. So it's kind of interesting, you know? He can only have that strength when nobody is questioning him.
Yeah, it's like as long as he sticks to the script in his mind, he's okay. But once it deviates from that, he just panics and either hangs up or...
Yeah, you can see this man clearly has his routine and his, like, very... Like, he wants to... What he says to Helen on the phone is, like, that's the end goal for him. I mean, well, I guess he would like for it to be drawn out. Like his conversation with Joy, but that's not what he got in this scene, at least.
No, and that's what makes Joy one of my more enjoyable like characters in this film.
Enjoyable.
Yes, enjoyable.
Wow. There you go.
Hello.
Hi. How are you?
Is this Damien?
Yeah. How you doing?
Oh, fine. Just told me you might be calling.
Yeah.
Well, I know how weird these things can be, but, you know, I've always had such faith in Trisha's judgment. I just thought, why not? You know, it's not like I have a huge social life. I mean, I do have a social life. It's just not huge.
Same here.
Really? That's so nice to hear. I mean, most people seem so confident.
Yeah.
Or you know, they're just real jerks.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just trying to thaw this steak, and it's so hard, and I... I'm sorry.
No, don't stop. Not because of me.
Well, it's just I feel I'm being so rude.
No, not at all.
Well, thanks.
Are you alone?
Yeah, I'm all alone. Nobody's listening in. Don't worry. God, you're just like me.
What are you wearing?
You mean when we go out? Where do you want to go? I mean, I'm pretty easy to please. I hate getting all dressed up.
What are you wearing now?
Just a pair of jeans, why?
Are they tight?
Not too tight, actually. They fit pretty good. But why do you want to know?
Not the jeans, underneath. What are you wearing underneath? Check.
Underneath? Well, but Damien, underneath is just... This isn't Damien, is it?
Are you all wet? Is your pussy all wet?
The way she reacts on the phone, she's just like so innocent and so hopeful.
His breathing in this movie, I mean, he nailed it. Well, mm-hmm. I don't like that's what I can imagine.
No, Dylan Baker one nailed does. It.
Oh,
God. I just wanted to remind you of that.
I mean, our main guy, Philip Seymour Hoffman, that's who we talk about. But I love, this is where we get that good relationship between Joy and Trish, because Trish just has that one line of, we all thought you would amount to nothing. There's a glimmer of hope after all. I'm like, oh my God. Like, these people, like, even the, like, you know, at this point I'm just thinking, like, Trish is just oblivious. But she's like, no, she's, like, cold-hearted in a way, too. And, like,
like
it just makes me, I'm like, wow, my family's so normal. Like, you know, every, you know, like, you always, like, at the holidays, you're just like, oh my God, like, my family, you know, like, I love them, but, like, you're like, oh yeah, that relative's that way, that relative's that way. Oh, that's, like, the little, like, they think we don't know about that, about their portion of the family.
But that's what I was going to say. Like, I feel like these characters vocalize things that everybody's feeling. I mean, yeah. Everybody, you know, if I were to think about things that people have thought about me or things that I've thought about other people, and you, all you have to do is vocalize it, and you're exactly the same as these characters.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You know?
Thought, like, everything out. Well, yeah, and that's something really interesting. I feel like that's almost, do you think that was a goal, like, of the director to almost make a movie, to make a film that was, like, he was like, okay, imagine you're, like, a family situation, no filters. Like, just, like, think, say every thought. Like, that's,
I don't know if I would go with no filters, because they are, like, playing roles and playing characters.
Yeah, but I mean, this is the fact of, like, how, like...
Yeah, no, but I agree.
Or open, is that better than no filters? Just because the way, like...
Open, yeah, like, the way this is written is mm-hmm. just, like... The language of the film is not how we would necessarily talk. Obviously not. But it's definitely more thought-based.
Well, yeah. I mean, all the characters, for the most part, are, like, very... I guess not, because they all keep their secrets, but at these weird moments they're very candid, which is the fact that Bill, like, tells Billy when Billy's asking him, like, did you do this and what did you do, and the whole, like what did it feel like, great.
Yeah, well, it's like the kid is Billy, right? Like, that's the kid's name.
Yeah,
like,
Bill, yeah.
You know, he comes out at the end of the okay, I'm not a guy, but I'm just saying, like, he comes out at the end, he's like, I just came, like, he has this moment. I'm pretty sure, like, most guys have had that moment, but he vocalizes it.
Yeah, you know? I mean, you all, like, I mean, everyone has that moment that it was, like, the first time that it happened, and it's usually, like, in a surprise, and, like, he's at that age, I think he plays an 11-year-old, and so, you know, he's hearing that other kids are saying this is what that happens, and the one kid says that he is, like, an 11-inch, you know,
yeah.
Dick, and that's the whole length and width conversation.
But he vocalizes it.
Yeah.
So it's, like, everything that you're seeing... Like, everything that you're seeing is just being vocalized, or it's he's using storylines that show that part of humanity, show that part of the characters. Do you
sure.
know what I mean?
No, and I don't have, as uncomfortable as it is, like, I don't have a problem with that, but then you put that on top of when this boy comes for the first time, and the dog goes and licks it, and then goes inside and licks this kid's mom's face. That's just, like, you know... That's like a, you know, getting punched in the face and then hit in the gut. Like, it's just,
yep.
you know, like, one pain, like, smoldering at, like, focusing one pain onto the other.
Yep.
And then Billy says, I came, and the family just, like, looks at him, and it's just like, well, like, what are you going to start singing? The Circle of Life?
These characters exist on, like, a darker level, right? We all interact with each other. In reality, this is one of the few films that sees, like, for lack of a better word, the darker side of humanity. Like, just what you do in your room when you're alone, Kyle. Like the, you personally. You know what I mean, though.
No, yeah, and well, and the darker side of the humanity in the sense of, I mean, like obviously there's illegal acts going on in this movie, from pedophilia to murder to even, I mean, sexual harassment with the phone calls. But it's the darker side, not in the sense of, like, you know, when you watch a movie about, like, terrorism, clearly that's a darker side of humanity. But this is,
yeah,
like,
but that's
the,
like,
humanity that most...
But it's treated as also something, it's treated as normal. I think,
yeah,
that's the thing. It's like, it's not, it's the darker side of humanity, but it's just, it's very earnest and,
yeah,
normal.
Well,
yeah,
let's put it this way. Like, that's even, like, the, like, smallest roles in this movie. So you have the Johnny's father, and he's just, like, we first hear him at the Little League game, and he's just, like, yelling at these, again, they're 11-year-olds, so whatever grade that is, and he's just yelling, don't fuck it up, don't fuck it up. It's just like, all right, that's messed up. And then they're at Callahan's, which I think that's...
And that's the actual Callahan's.
That's actual
Callahan's. Definitely,
because
I've been there.
Yeah. Was in Fort Lee, New Jersey, right next to Hiram's One Out.
Yeah,
Hiram's two hot dog places right in Fort Lee, New Jersey. And... but he's saying, like, oh, I think my son's a fag.
Yeah.
And it's just then, and that's like, and then that's almost where you see, like, a kind side of Dylan Baker saying, like, well, yeah, but, like, what else, you know, like, maybe, you know, not that he might not be, but if he is, like, what can you do? Because he offers to get him a hooker.
I was gonna say that's the best part of that whole conversation, and then boy, is maybe getting the hooker. And he goes, but Dylan Baker starts to interrupt. He goes, you're right, it's too late.
Yeah.
Like, he's 11. I mean, that for me was, like, the best kind of turn in the conversation.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And so my point, like, bringing that up is that even this one little character just, again, expands that world of everyone. We're viewing this world of very sadistic or, you know, what to call them all. But they each are very, they're... problems are very visible to us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess the furthest we think for a while Christina is probably normal, and then she does her whole reveal of that she was this character that lives across the hall from Helen and Alan.
But even before the reveal, it's kind of fucked up. She basically takes this guy that's vomiting, you know, or, like, he's passed out,
yeah,
right?
Okay, forgot about
and
that.
Then
yeah,
tries,
yeah,
to snuggle with him, and I was like,
yeah,
that's a good clue. Not everything is right.
Yeah,
you know?
No. And now that you say that, like, I remember that and being like, that's, you know, that's clearly a weird thing. And then he wakes up and it's just like a long. Just they stay on that shot. That's the one thing. I mean, and let's use your expertise, cinematography. Like, the cinematography in this movie.
The cinematography is great. I feel like it, you know, going back to that first scene, though, it really sets the tone, right? I mean, it doesn't, it's not flashy. It lets things play out. You know, it's I think the same, I was reading that the DP is the same as the Velvet Goldmine.
Okay.
I think is the,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, really?
So
okay,
there,
that
there's,
makes sense.
You can see some similarities, like,
yeah,
in that crane shot, right? When he is, when Dylan Baker's fantasizing about killing all the people in the park, and
yeah,
the camera kind of swoops in and then brings it up, and it,
yeah,
just takes him out of the reality. But otherwise, everything is pretty straightforward. I mean, I'm not diminishing the directorial work, because it's very strong. It's obviously very thoughtful,
yeah,
but it's, there's nothing flashy. There are no whip pans. There's no, you know, it's very, you know, it's locked off. It's steady movements.
Sure.
It lets shots play out. But I feel like it, basically the camera work, it almost mimics what we perceive as normal. You know, and allows the scenes to, it allows what's disturbing about it to be elevated. You know, if we were shooting this, if you were shooting, you know, imagine the way that pedophiles are usually portrayed, you know, it'd be like the off angle shot, the, you know, no, running through the hallway, stop, you know, and instead, because it plays out in very, you know, standard coverage, it almost makes it that much more unexpected and disturbing.
Yeah, so... like I bring that up because then in that scene where she's like cuddling with him, and then all of a sudden, you know, he's just drunkenly passed out and snoring, and then all of a sudden he jumps up and he goes to the bathroom and starts vomiting, and they just stay in that room.
Mm-hmm.
And you just hear the audio, and you're just like lingering with her, and then even he comes back in and is like, what the fuck are you doing here? Like, get out. And it just...
Everything
just
holds a little... It's kind of to your point, like, that, you know, maybe... I definitely felt like the movie was dragging a little bit. However, I appreciate the fact that he's lingering on these shots. He's making you feel uncomfortable. He never gives you an easy out, you know? So you're in that room and you're like, get the fuck out of here. Like, what's wrong with you? You're cuddling with this dude. He's vomiting in the next room. Get the fuck out. But instead, you're forced to sit there and kind of go inside her head. What is she thinking? What's he going to do when he comes out, you know?
Yeah.
And it elevates everything about the film.
Yeah, you'd sit there and you start thinking, maybe she's thinking he'll come back in and be like, oh, thanks for taking care of me. Because otherwise he would have fallen. I mean, she'd knocked on the door, but he would have, like, fallen right there and lying down on the floor, passed out.
But it's like, I mean, God, it's everything. You know, not to get ahead of ourselves, but I feel like it's the elevator ride that's uncomfortable. It's that shot that's uncomfortable. It's the conversation with Dylan and his son that's uncomfortable. It's Lara Flynn Boyle sitting on the sofa with Philip Seymour Hoffman, where you're like, oh my God,
slow
get
hand
out.
Move.
Right? But it's...
I've seen some slow hand moves in my day. But God, that just...
Isn't
that
amazing? It's amazing.
Friends of yours,
of ours. Don't say yours. Ours. You know who you're referencing.
We've seen it. We've seen it. And this is just... Oh, my God. Like, this is not an easy film.
No.
It's not an easy film. And in terms
it's
of...
It's a well-made film.
It is.
Yeah.
But it's a well-written film.
Yeah. But it just...
This script is amazing to me.
It puts you
brave to me.
Yeah. No, it's... That's...
I have a question for you, just thinking stylistically, and this is total speculation, but I'm curious about what you guys think. You know, talking about it stylistically, it definitely feels... It feels very appropriate for the subject matter, but the style feels a little dated. Like, I'm curious if you think... Like, what would this film look like today?
Yeah, no, That's a good point, because I don't know what to call it, but it definitely has. It just falls into that era of filmmaking, like in the 90s.
Well, this is something I mentioned in Boogie Nights, right? And in Hard Eight. Like, when we see Philip Seymour Hoffman in these P.T. Anderson films, that feels like it could be made today. And then we go back to a lot of these films in, like, the late 90s, and they're kind of dated, some more than others.
I mean, I think it's going to be the same thing for, like, you know, each decade that you have like certain genres so I mean, we're talking about, like, in those, again, that's P.T. Anderson that, like, made these films that were saying, like, look timeless or could be made today and look the same way. But I mean, to go what you're saying, and what would it look like today? Like, what
I just feel like the tech, like, you know, it's indie, it's low budget, right? I feel like what you could get away with that budget now, you know, there's so many more options. Whether or not they're appropriate for this.
So we're talking like a lot of drone shots.
You know, never hurts to throw a drone or two in. But, you know, the question is, I think that it's appropriate for the subject. It totally works. But I was thinking, I'm like, this looks a little dated. Mm-hmm. I wonder what it would look like today, or if he would make different choices or keep the same choices, you know, leave it as is.
I think for the most, like, stylistically, like, the pauses and stuff like that would be, maybe the composition would be a little bit different, but I think as far as, I mean, then we're getting into camera versus editing, so maybe what I'm focusing on more now is, like, the editing, saying these lingering of the shots, and maybe, who knows, if they got Philip Seymour Hoffman puking in a toilet and went, no, it's so much better to just have it in this wide shot the whole time.
Yeah. But there's very little movement, you know, so there's very little camera movement.
Yeah.
It's,
I mean, in this
pretty
movie,
much...
like, you have even very little insert shots, the insert shots being,
I think,
you know...
And you touched on this, just... The way it looks, it just normalizes these, like, not normal situations, I guess, for what we're seeing, you know? Like, maybe they happen in real... I'm sure they happen in real life, but it's just, like, not what we're used to seeing. And it's just, like, normalizing them.
Well, that reminds me of, like, a thought I had, which I wrote down at one point. This is, like... almost like a sadistic Hallmark movie, like the way, like, the music in it, like,
yeah.
Again, it has the very trope music for each feeling.
Yeah.
Like at the Little League, the romance just sounds like right a very basic. Then they have like classical music. Then they have an opera song. Like they almost cover, like there wasn't like a rock out, but they almost had like a little bit of every genre.
Yeah.
Almost sounded like samples of each genre.
Yeah.
And so it just had this hallmark, like, and then the conversations between Bill and Billy almost felt like they're like this X-rated version of an after-school special of
Father
and son talking together. So I mean, that's
after-school special.
You know what? Like honestly, this falls into a category of almost like a John Waters at some moments.
But I feel like John Waters, yes and no. I feel like John Waters kind of sensationalizes.
Sure.
I feel like
he
would have sensationalized. You know?
Yeah.
And this is almost just taking it, treating it a very deadpan way. I mean, there are a few moments where I was like, you really have to go there? Like, not as far as the subject matter. I feel like, you know, nothing here's off limits, but just as far as when, you know, I feel like it diminishes the power of the film when you take something and treat it in a different way. So something about Cameron Mannheim's, like, the story of Pedro, that for me... Yeah. Just made it cartoonish in the way that other things in the film were not cartoonish and therefore resonated more.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I don't know.
No, that's, and like you said earlier, like hers was the, like, if you were going to be like, oh, let's remove a character.
I wouldn't want to remove her because I actually like that element, but just that flashback to me was weird.
Yeah,
it's, I mean, but there's something great. Okay, just playing devil's advocate after I've said that she was an extraneous storyline. There's something great about the fact that, I mean, first of all, it's a rape scene, which the fact that you can treat a rape scene in a kind of deadpan way, that for me just, you know, goes to show what the tone of the rest of the film is like, that it didn't stick out. But you have this guy, the doorman, right, who's like, I'd like some ice cream before I go downstairs.
Yeah.
And that for me was such a human, real moment
that
it kind of validated the rest of the scene, right? You know, it's the same about, you know, Dylan Baker going and making the tuna sandwich really earnestly.
Yeah.
That for me validated the rest of the scene because no matter how horrifying it is, he's actually humanized that character and humanized the activity.
Yeah, Johnny didn't want hot fudge and then they didn't have grape high C.
Yeah.
So,
you know, but it's like
tuna fish sandwich.
No, but ice cream is a big part of this film. I just,
Okay.
I like ice cream.
Kyle, we had White Russians for Big Lebowski.
Yeah, we should have had. Yeah, we were drinking White Russians.
Some ice cream here with fudge.
Yeah, we need to. You know what? We have to think about that from now on before every episode. Like, what is the appropriate?
Oh man, I'm feeling left out.
Oh man.
Sorry, I messed up.
We could have had tuna sandwiches
tuna
too.
Ice cream.
Oh God, no!
Ice cream and tuna sandwiches. Never again, tuna.
No. Yes, I love tuna.
I said switch to sardines.
No.
There's such like that, you know, that moment though with Pedro, that was such a great moment where like I feel like we've all had, okay, one of my most vivid childhood memories is like a little, like going off topic a little bit. I remember my parents had a dinner party for one of their new colleagues and their new colleague didn't know when to leave. So.
Well, like dinner etiquette.
So they had the dinner, they had dessert.
Yeah.
They drinks, like, I think there were a couple other people invited. Everybody's like, you know, it's time to go. It's kind of late. You know, they left. Other guy just stuck around. They're like, we're going to go and do the dishes now. He's like, that's cool. He like came and joined them in the kitchen. And then they're like,
sorry, I love that.
They're like, we're going to go to bed now.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Literally. They had to say like, we're going to bed. We've done the dishes.
Cool.
We cleaned up. And he's like, okay, well, maybe I'll leave. So it's that moment. It's that moment of like, of not, of having unexpected etiquette. I guess I'll leave it that way, that I totally recognize in that scene.
Unexpected etiquette meets like social awkwardness.
Yeah, but you know, but then the question is, does anybody really have proper etiquette? Do you know what I mean? Is anybody ever, I think there's some things that people hopefully don't do, but I love that moment because it felt so real to me. I'm like, I buy it, you know?
He wanted his ice cream before his raping. Like, that's,
I mean, 100%.
Do you think
oh, boy.
What we're seeing is the truth?
As in,
from
her. Oh.
Because
like
this is the only, like, recanted story.
Oh, like,
you're
saying
get.
Maybe she invited him. I mean,
no, I don't know. I'm just asking because it's like,
I think what she's telling, then what we, and then like
she seems like an honest person in this moment.
Well, in that sense, because she has that really like dark moment for a second where she's just like, she like says something like, "Oh, he says so you did chop?" Because that was the whole thing. She first comes to the door and says, "Did you hear about Pedro?" And he was like bludgeoned and you know, like mutilated or whatever, and someone stole his penis or whatever. So then when she confesses his penis.
Oh, sorry, I didn't hear you. Okay. Just kidding.
And so when she's opens up to Alan at the diner, where she's also chooses to have ice cream.
Yes.
But
appropriately.
Yeah. But she just has that moment because then Alan says, "Oh, like why would you lie about, like why would somebody lie about that? And did you actually chop off?" She just has this turn, like this really like gravelly voice where she's like, "I was not gonna touch that thing again." And I'm like, "Oh my god!" Like this woman is just.
Yeah.
Off the deep end too. Like it wasn't just a, like, even then, like that's a messed up scenario. But I'm like, okay, like, I mean, well, it gets a little cartoonish where she's just literally snaps his neck
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
That's a little like I'm just imagining when he was.
Well, that's
top
why
of
to
her
me,
at one point, why didn't that?
That's
also,
like a
yeah.
story,
that,
you know. She's
just
telling
that,
of the story.
Yeah.
You know, so when she says snap neck, the neck snaps. You know, there's nothing more.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that at all. I was expecting, you know, an inanimate
gore.
Object used or something like that. Like a bludgeoning.
She was efficient.
Yeah.
Good for her.
She just snapped his neck like nothing.
I don't know. I like visually their size difference.
Yeah, her and Lara Flynn Boyle were later on in the practice together, by the way. That was
yeah,
cool.
Very true.
That was a good show.
I used to watch that back in the day, like 9 o'clock at night or whatever.
Yeah.
One other little thing that I love, that happiness is actually... They say happiness several
a couple
times,
times
movie,
yeah.
But it's a song in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I was very curious. If that would be funny if the one thing that this was, like, recognized by, like, the Oscars or something, which was just, like, she's singing, like...
Original song?
Yeah. Like, yeah, original song. But not even that.
They're so good. Isn't that... Doesn't Vlad play the cover of Light Up My Life?
Yeah, Light of My Life. And then there's also... What's the song that plays when Alan and Christina are dancing, and it plays again when he goes to her apartment later on, and just like after he gets turned down by Helen, it's I have it written down. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm All Out of Love. It's a great use of the song.
Yeah.
I'm so
like
so
REO Speedwagon. Yeah.
Yeah, that's REO Speedwagon, and then they use it later on again, like I said, when he goes in there and they just. Awkwardly, and that's the last time we see Alan, right? He goes in to Christina's apartment, and because he's referenced later on, but he goes in and she's under the sheets, and he just like sleeps on top of the sheets, and they're like facing away from one another because she says although she's a passionate woman, she hates sex. So that's a whole. You're just like that's where they leave that relationship. Our closure on Alan is at the end of the film. When all sisters are down in Florida with the parents, and Helen says that she has a guy for Joy, and it's her neighbor. And then Trisha's like, "Why don't you have me a guy?" And she's like, "Trust me, Trisha.
I love that. I love that.
This guy is for Joy." And it's like, wow, like, Helen, you sadistic,
brutal,
like, and then even the mom's like, "You don't have someone for me?" It's like, Helen is the puppet master of these relationships, and Dad's like, "I don't want anybody," while he's just putting his salt on his meal so he can die sooner than
yeah,
later.
And you mentioned this before, again, it's the doctor who says, like, "You're going to live to 100 if you skip the salts," or something along those lines.
Yeah.
And you can see his face, he's, like, not happy about that.
Yeah, he's just, like, healthy as an like, he thought maybe he would have a tumor in his lung, they were looking at his lungs, and he asked about his heart. He's like, "Oh, you're going to live to be 100, and he's like, 35 more years to go? Like, it's like, Jesus. Like, and he's even playing, you know, when he's playing golf at one point, and there's a guy just lying on the ground in the background, the ambulance is coming, he's just looking over there. Everyone just, like, that's his big thing, is I guess he's looking forward to...
Yeah, so, like, I guess we should just touch on what are basically the endings for all these characters.
Yeah, so, I mean, we said it for Alan and Christina, that they're, like, in bed, but then Helen ends up sharing that.
And it's kind of great to think about, like, why they ended up together. Like, I feel like each person gives, like, the other person gives them something they couldn't give themselves. So
yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, Alan has like such strong sexual fantasies but such low self-esteem, and the two of them, like, he can't reconcile one with the other. And I feel like Helen,
well, cause he could have had Helen, right? I mean, is that pretty much, is that, does everyone agree, like, if he was
but his self-esteem was so low, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like, she was into that whole demeaning talk.
But he can do it over the phone as long as nobody's interrupting him, you know what I mean?
because he knocks on the door and she just even recognizes.
Like, and she let him in, which was crazy to me. I would have been like, oh, it's you.
Yeah.
She's like, all right.
Yeah, I was surprised by that.
But then I feel like Cameron Manheim.
Inspirations for poems, I guess.
I mean, she is like, she's basically that person who perhaps has even lower self-esteem. So it allows him to somehow, you know, allow himself to be physically with somebody, even if it's not sexual. Do you know what I mean?
Because he says something at the diner, like, oh, I really like you.
Yeah.
So he's just looking for, that's like his human connection, is just being there. Because he has that awkward moment. We get like the quintessential Philip Seymour Hoffman like awkward laugh.
What do you want?
I want you to fuck me.
I don't think I can do that. I mean, I don't think I can do that. Gotta go.
Call me tomorrow.
Hi.
Hey, Alan. Did you see the playoffs last night?
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good.
I was on my knees praying for that shot.
It worked.
So awkward. It's amazing. But it's kind of fantastic that two people, right? Two people can be compatible because they both view themselves with like more, like they have lower self-esteem than the other person does. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's kind of a twisted way of bonding, but it makes sense for the film. Yeah. You know? It's not like you make me feel good about myself. It's like you feel shittier about yourself than I do, and so therefore I can actually be with you.
It's funny, but I feel like that's a realistic thing.
Yeah, like a relatable, like, yeah, people find enjoy
company.
Loves
company,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay, so end of characters. So that's Alan Christina.
Yeah, Alan Christina. So let me just look at my character list right here. I mean, we had Bill. We don't see that he gets arrested or anything. Pretty much his family leaves him in, like, the early mornings.
You can infer he was arrested.
Yeah. I mean, because the dad calls and says, I'm going to fucking kill you. Like, yeah, it's pretty obvious because Johnny ends up in the hospital, and then, I mean, we didn't even touch upon this, but
he's either arrested or going to be killed.
Well, I read that they originally had in the screenplay that the family sent him a package and the house blows up.
What?
Yeah, that would have been really out of place, right?
That's one of those things that I feel like, okay, if you're taking it to the surreal, yes, but then I feel like it undermines the rest of the messaging for the film, which is you have the abnormal, which is actually the normal, you know?
Yeah, no, that I'm glad that didn't make it in.
Yeah, and I was confused. I wasn't even sure if they were saying his family or like the like Johnny's family or something like that.
A bomb, though? Whatever. Yeah. That's stupid.
But Bill confesses to Billy, because Billy has all his questions. That's just such a, Billy's crying and just asking. Because Billy mentioned the one friend that was home alone.
What does Billy say? Like, that's like, to me, that was like super disturbing.
He said, "Would you rape me?"
Yeah.
He goes, "No, I would just jerk off."
Yeah.
But that, you know, that is such a great, what I love about that moment for like a number of reasons is like that for me is pure drama in the sense that, you know, that's the conversation that anybody that wasn't as confident would have cut out after he asked, would you rate me? And it would have ended on like Dylan Baker's look and it would have cut out and gone to the next scene, right?
Yeah.
To me, that's such a brave choice. You're right about that. Like,
definitely. No, I mean,
I could never do that.
I wrote like down exactly what they said. The exchange goes, what was it like? It was great. And I mean, then, granted, again, there's like multiple, so many pauses and Billy sobbing. And then, would you do it again? Yes. Would you ever fuck me? No. I jerk off instead. It's like, oh my God. Really,
but here's what's crazy about that. If you, okay, take away the language, take away what they're talking about, mm-hmm. and just look at the situation. It's a father having an open and yeah. honest conversation with his son, right? So if you look at it in like the abstract, what could be bad about that? You know, and then the yeah. question is like, what should you not be open about, right? What should you not be open about? And then is that what this film is about, right? Or should people not be open about this? Should the film not be open about...
Sure.
You know?
I mean, there's... Because to go to, like, the simpler times of the movie where the son just has these sexual questions and just, you know... I mean, he's asking because he's hearing this language for the first time of, you know, like, cum and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but still, like, but the father goes, answers are like...
Yeah, no, exactly. He goes... It pushes, you know... the bar too much by then saying, like, you know, he's like, Dad, did you ever measure yourself? He said, no, I never thought to, like, you know, bother to measure myself. He's like, would you like me to? Like,
yeah.
That's, it's just like the one little, okay, yeah. Bill, too much.
Well, yeah.
Bill. We all know one of those Bills. Bill's out there. And not, well, not that, like, that specific Bill. But that kind of takes it too far.
Wow, yeah, you're scaring me. No. I know exactly what you're saying, and that's...
Yeah. So, I mean, so out of that clear cut of the three girls, the parents are still, like, in this condo together.
Parents are not divorced,
yeah.
but
no,
not
and that's
together.
Very
together,
clear,
yeah.
yeah.
And then each, Helen is just continuing her life in, of poetry and spreading the good word, and then Trish has clearly moved down there with her two sons and her, like, infant daughter. We can assume that Bill has been arrested. And then Joy is going to be set up with Alan. Christina has been arrested because they found, like, the body parts in the freezer. And, I mean, that's pretty much, that's the cast for you right there. That's
this, like, again, weird film, right? But it wins, at least again, story-wise, because it makes you care about people that normally in film you do not want to care about, you know?
Like, yeah, to me, first...
The pedophile,
first it
example.
Goes, like, performance, like, the best things of this film, it goes performances, and then it goes, like, this, I guess, to call it, like, brave on a certain level of writing this screenplay, and just, like, you know, this story, and creating it, and, I mean, making, as a filmmaker, making yourself, like, vulnerable to... Yeah, he, like, obviously knew that there was going to be backlash from this movie. But in the end of the day, it's a movie. Like, that's what people have to...
Who do you think is
the
most...
Not advocating anything by any means, clearly.
Yeah, like, but I think it's an interesting question of, like, caring about these people. Like, who... Because, you know, even though each of these characters is unlikable in their own way, I do feel like some of them are more empathetic. I'm curious what you guys... Which characters you felt were more empathetic?
I
or did
guess,
you sympathize with more?
I mean... I'd go with Mona, the mother, is, like, the most empathetic. It's just, like, she's kind of, we don't know. I mean, did the girls mention anything of, like, her as, like, a parent in their little conversations? I can't remember anything specific.
I don't remember.
I feel like all they care about is that they're getting divorced. Like, that's the shock.
Yeah. And so.
And who knows
yeah.
first?
I'm sorry?
I love the whole element of, like, when. The two sisters.
Oh,
talking.
Yeah, the two sisters, yeah, because...
Like, I thought that, you know... I thought that
yeah,
was
Trish
secret.
Thought that she knows, like, you know, because she's, I guess, you know, because she's, like, the mom out of the three sisters, so she's playing that, the mom and talking to the mom, and so she thinks that about, she knows about the divorce, and thinks she knows about Joy quitting her job, but no, Helen knew it as well, and Joy's the one that's, like, left out of, you know...
Yeah.
knowing about the divorce, because she just can't handle it.
No, but that's a fair question.
Yeah, I'd say... Mona, maybe like Lenny, but then in the end, like right to the beginning of John Lovitz's character of Andy.
Yeah.
What about you? Who do you think is the most empathetic character?
I don't know, because it's like at times I'm like, oh, it's Philip Seymour Hoffman. But
I think we're totally like, but maybe you're like using this and you're like, oh, I know exactly what I'm going to say, but are we totally forgetting the children? Because clearly it's the children.
Oh my God. Okay. If you want to, yes, of course.
Billy
right.
and Johnny.
I don't want anyone to be like, oh my God, they didn't
oh
mention
Oh my God,
the
they
kids.
Weren't even missing the children.
Of course.
All of a sudden I was
right.
like, and
adult
you
characters.
Clever.
Please. Okay? Imagine that.
Yeah.
You guys
you,
are
yeah,
terrible.
Typical men not even thinking about that. It's like, oh, she's digging us our trench right
no.
now.
No.
No.
Because what's her character's name? The murderer?
Christina.
Christina, yeah.
Yeah.
For a while, I'm like, oh, Christina, oh, you know, like, and then like, oh, okay.
Yeah, well, it goes into that category of, like, again, I mean, she was being raped, and then she had the opportunity to, you know, it was like, you know, a crime of passion or whatever, her moment of snapping his neck. But then it's just, like, call the cops, you know, like.
Well, she seems so eager to tell him, too. Like, she's not, but she is. She's having ice cream, and she's telling him, you know. It's
yeah.
Not, so, like. That dropped out there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What about Joy? What do you guys think about Joy?
Oh, you know what? Yeah, no, Joy, I really felt for her. She gets shit on the entire movie.
Yeah, she's just a very... She, like, has, like, almost, like, her, like, Larry David Seinfeld moments of, like, digging herself in these, like, little, like, you know, so she has sex with Vlad, and then... But that's not his
for
wife.
For me, like,
comes
perfect
by.
Actor for that character... Perfect look, perfect, just everything worked with her.
Yeah.
With this is a Philip Seymour Hoffman podcast, so we tend to focus on him, but
and then she takes $500 out of the ATM. That for me was the total kicker.
Oh my
where,
god.
Where, you know,
oh, yeah.
Talk about low self esteem. I mean, that for me was you know, everybody. I mean, you have Philip Seymour Hoffman, low self esteem, you know, you have Helen, you know, even though she's a total bitch, low self esteem,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I don't think Trish has that problem. I really don't, you know. I feel like Mona does, you know, the five facelifts or, you know, whatever. But I feel like Joy, of all the characters, low self-esteem.
I even forgot about Joy in this, like, entire
Yeah, she's just the Joy is, like, the physical, even, like, embodiment.
But Joy, I'm glad you brought up Joy, because Joy, again, she wants to help people. She goes and gets this job.
I'm not a scab.
And she ends up just getting yelled at for that.
I'm a strike breaker.
Yeah.
I'm a strike breaker. And then she's feeling all good the next day after Vlad, and she's in her little, the music's playing, and she doesn't care that lettuce and tomatoes are being thrown at her. And
yeah, so I picked Joy to answer your question, even though I didn't think of it originally, because I completely forgot about her, which is kind of appropriate.
But that, you know, it's interesting because she's different than the other characters, right? And that is there any, like, her own human flaws are revealed, but there's nothing malicious or grotesque, or it's more just low self-esteem revealed, right? In
yeah.
a way, she's different than the other.
I mean, her worst moment is, I guess, right in the beginning of being, like, mean to John.
That is literally her, like, crappiest
she didn't know about
element as a human
Vlad
being.
Having whatever you want to call that woman in his life.
And when I was watching this, I was like, oh, she, you know, she's, like, a bad person here. Like, what the hell
yeah.
is she doing? But then you see the rest of the film, you're like, okay,
never mind. Yeah, it's almost like the rest of the film, she's, like, paying penance, in a way. It has this, I mean, Greek tragedy realm to it, I guess, this film. These people that are just in... I don't know, like, trying to push the stone up the hill and it keeps falling back on them. It's, yeah. And do you have anyone out of those characters that we had being said?
You know, it's interesting that you brought up the kids, because I honestly was not thinking of the
kids.
I
thought you were just like...
I was not
like,
baiting. I
was
not baiting you.
Hook, line, and sinker.
I mean, I
you
feel...
got us.
Yeah.
I feel like the children... I feel like Billy, right? I feel like Billy actually just serves for us to understand his father. I know that, you know, that's simplifying it, but I kind of feel like I never see him except at the end when he's like, you know, manages to like come, right?
Yeah.
You never see him doing anything on his own. It's always with the father, and he serves,
yeah.
you know. So that said, I feel like Joy is the most empathetic character, just because you just cringe every time because things happen to her, you
yeah.
know.
And her face when they happen. You know, it's,
yeah.
again, I just love her face when those things happen.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, everybody, and I think this, we spoke about it earlier, you know, that kind of humanizing as of a pedophile, I feel like they all have empathetic moments, right? You know, so Philip Seymour Hoffman, I empathize with him when he's in that elevator. I've been there, it's uncomfortable,
yeah,
you know.
Of course.
And you empathize with Trish when all of a sudden, you know, Jesus, like, there's world, down. Yeah, world's turned upside
down. She just
down.
Thought she had, like, a husband that doesn't want to have sex with her that often.
Yeah, and instead, oops. He's a pedophile, yeah. You know, and so I feel like, and even if it's not those specific, obviously those specific situations, I think everybody's been on a date where all of a sudden, you know, they thought it was going well, and then suddenly it wasn't, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, but Trish walks outside very and says, serial rapist pervert. Yeah. On the outside of their house.
I like, yeah, you know, so I feel like everybody has those moments where you're like, you might do despicable things, and yet there's something that you are fundamentally human, you know?
Mm-hmm. One last thing I want to ask is...
Before that, I just want to say Molly Shannon's in this film.
Oh, yeah, Molly Shannon.
I just want to have that on the record.
That's a funny... That might be the funniest scene in the movie. I'm just trying to... Is when she... The day after she... Joy gets the news of John Lovitz's character killing himself.
Mm-hmm.
And she is at her desk, and she's crying in her next door... And then Molly Shannon, like, asked her what's wrong. And they're each... And then it goes to, like, the person across from her and then the other guy. And they're like, oh, like, is it the guy that had, like, acne or the scar, like, scar on his face?
You're like, Hispanic-looking guy?
Yeah, Hispanic. Was only here for a year. Like, it's like, oh, like, that kind of... Yeah.
That's great.
Do you... as long as we're talking about cameos, so this a little more than cameo... The woman that sleeps with Lenny, one of my favorite characters, flashback, have you guys seen Coma?
No.
Oh, my goodness. Such a good film. Go watch Coma. That's Coma. Her. Yeah, she plays a really creepy...
What year is Coma?
The 70s with Michael Douglas.
Oh!
So good.
Wait, did she have a... Why am I blanking on right now, thinking of Michael Douglas and then thinking about his... What's the famous adventure movie he's in? Romancing the Stone.
Yeah.
Doesn't she have, like, a bit of a... who does the voice of Jessica Rabbit, please help me. Kathleen Turner. Doesn't she have a bit of a Kathleen Turner vibe?
Maybe.
Voice, maybe?
Yeah, like, it was very raspy.
Yeah.
Like, very raspy. But,
oh, I know who you're talking about now. Yeah.
But she, it was such a good movie, first of all, based on a Michael Crichton novel.
Ooh,
but
Coma.
Yeah.
I love me some Michael Crichton.
Jean-Vive Bujold, I think, is in it. Anyway, this character is amazing. So I was super excited to see her come back along with Ben Gazzara, who...
Yeah.
Is also one of my favorites. So, there you go.
Awesome. Yes, yeah, so the one last thing I want to bring up is, I know I thought this, like, from the trailer, but I'm not saying, like, it will have to have the trailer, but just from the spectrum of the characters, because they even kind of look the same, is Billy the next iteration of Philip Seymour Hoffman's character?
Mm.
He just, I don't know, they physically, like, he looked like if he played a younger version. Mm-hmm. I remember watching the trailer and thinking it was going to be one of these movies that was going to show that Philip Seymour Hoffman was the grown-up version. It was going to be,
sequel.
Like Tree of Life was, showed Sean Penn a grown-up version of Brad Pitt.
There's a trailer with different characters, but I think same themes for Happiness, which I haven't seen. But oh. I'd be interested now that you mention that, because that's a great point. I mean, he is very awkward.
Yeah, he's going to become, like, he's, like, sexually repressed.
Yep.
And, like, I mean, that was, like, a moment that I think, I don't know what Bill's reaction would have been. Like, if Bill was a normal enough dad or whatever, like, forget, pedophile, but even had these more open conversations with Billy.
Yeah.
Like, if he was sitting there after Billy, like, came for the first time and he came, I don't know what his reaction would have been, but I think that's what Billy was, like, looking for.
Yeah.
Like sharing it and, like, I don't know if he wanted, like, a little, like, golf clap or something.
That would have been amazing.
Yeah.
That's a great... I can absolutely see that.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's just really interesting. If you watch the trailer, I'm curious if you'll feel that way. But, again, just, like, he does look like I've... From the glass, some, like, the props, the costumes, but to just...
Yep.
A physical being. He looks like a younger version of Philip Seymour Hoffman.
You mentioned sequel, right? I was reading, like, Life in Wartime. It's supposed to be a loose sequel to
I think that's the name of it.
I've never seen
Life
it.
Life
in Wartime. It's
in
the same director. I'm reading now, apparently the sisters are in it.
Oh, all three, like not even just the characters, but the actresses?
I don't know. I don't think the actresses are. It just says the plot revolves around the Jordan sisters featured in Happiness, Trish, Joy, and Helen. But I don't see them listed as actresses in here, so...
It's played by different people?
Yeah, actually it is. Now I see it now. Ali Sheedy is Helen. Allison Janney is Trish. Sirian Hines is Bill. Monsreda.
Wait, Bill?
Bill, yes.
Bill's still around? Is this a...
I don't know what happens in this. I'm just telling you.
I'm sorry. And what's the name of it again?
Life in Wartime. Same director.
Hoff fans, let's check it out together and we'll talk
about it.
Yeah,
we got no Hoffman in this. There's someone called Gabby Hoffman in this.
We can maybe quick talk about it in our second recap episode or something. Or...
Yeah, we'll have to check it out. I'm just curious.
Total factoid, as long as you're like, if you can surf, it might be worth checking it out. Because when I was doing some Googling, I saw that Philip Seymour Hoffman's character... Yeah, the sister's name is Jordan, right? Like, it's Helen Jordan. But then I believe Joy and Philip Seymour Hoffman's character share the same last name. It was like Joy Jordan something, and his was Alan something. It starts,
I just
with,
saw
it starts
Alan
with an M.
On the IMDb.
It's one of those... I found it when I was Googling, and I was like, that's really strange. So just a little side intrigue. I was like, I wonder if they're the product of, you know, just in a, maybe in the back, you know, back storyline.
Yeah, I mean, everything's done for a reason, right? It's not these, so that would be curious to see. I can't find it here, but...
Yeah, I think I saw, on IMDb that it just said, like, his character. It was weird.
Yeah,
like,
just listed as Alan.
Which is really interesting because John Lovitz's character has a full name.
Then it must be somebody must have been making that up, but I was like, that's really, I was like,
maybe,
that's
maybe,
even
maybe
more
they're
twisted.
Just guessing that Alan and Joy end up together.
Ooh,
that's a little
presumptive.
Yeah, I wonder if like what that date comes to fruition. Because is Helen talking out of her ass like, oh, I've got someone for you? Because clearly she's not.
I got the perv next door.
Alan is in Alan Mellencamp.
That's the Mellencamp.
And Joy Mellencamp. Yeah,
his brother.
Yeah. In Life in Wartime, they're the same characters, and I guess they do get together.
Oh, that's it. They get married.
You'll never guess who plays Alan in
Jack Black.
Life in Wartime.
John Lovitz.
You're close with Black.
Michael Ian Black?
Close. Michael K. Williams. As in, like, Chalky Black from Boardwalk Empire, The Wire.
From The Wire? Yeah, what's...
He plays Alan in this sequel. Yes, I don't know. No, they completely recast everyone.
That's fine if they completely recast.
No, the characters are the same, but there's not one.
No, but I'm saying
same
that's,
actor. Yeah,
that's
interesting.
That's very like Louis style, right?
One season he has like all of a sudden he has a black wife and like black kids.
Yeah, he's like she was the one I wanted to cast.
Yeah.
No, I mean, we'll definitely have to check that out just to see.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well. I would never have guessed Michael K. Williams replacing Philip Seymour Hoffman. Not replacing, because again, recast, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, and he's a great actor.
I love Michael K. Williams, yeah.
What's his character's name from The Wire?
Omar. Who famously does not give a fuck at some point.
Does not give a fuck.
And Chalky Black in
Boardwalk. Chalky Black or Chalky White?
Oh, Chalky White. He said black, yeah.
Yeah. That makes more sense, Chalky
yeah,
White.
Yeah, Chalky White, yeah.
On Boardwalk.
No, Chalky Black wouldn't make any sense.
On Blackboard Empire, right?
On Blackboard Empire, yeah.
All right. Well,
any other things you want to touch on this happiness?
No, plenty
of experiences,
plenty of
childhood experiences.
Movie.
Yes.
Yes, no. a lot of touching.
No, thankfully didn't like bring up any like repressed memories. I'm very thankful.
Do you
want
to bring those up? Do you want to lie on this couch right now? We'll discuss them.
I don't have any.
Oh, we'll find them.
Not repressed. Things I don't want to talk about. There's a difference, I think.
Fair. Well, thank you, Anne, for coming
on. Yeah, thank you, guys. This
was
fun.
I remember like discussing being like, well, it's going to be like in the 20s this episode. And, you know, like, you know, all the way back in like February when asking you if you'd be on it. And it's like, oh, when's that going to be?
Oh, that was February.
And now we're in, you know, July time. So
that's fantastic.
July time. Summer months. So, Anne, where can people find you, follow you?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Check you out.
If that's what you want, if you want like an Alan calling you.
Yeah,
I'll leave my
phone
number out of it. Well, my website is under construction, but by the time this airs, it may be up. It's my name, annpaws.com.
Cool.
And my Instagram is the same. So
Perfect.
It's just annpaws.
Cool.
Can I follow you on Instagram? I don't know.
You should follow me.
Yeah, you should follow me.
Maybe I do.
We should all follow you. We gotta create the P.S. I love Hoffman Instagram. So
yeah, I've been only posting stuff on my personal and tagging it onto our Facebook page. But
yes, so you can follow us on that Facebook page.
Yeah, P.S. I love Hoffman on Facebook.
Please watch this film and comment. We definitely want
to
hear.
Definitely. I hope we didn't scare you, Hoff fans, away from this. This is, I mean, it's a great performance in the end of the day. Philip Seymour, by many actors, but Philip Seymour Hoffman gives a great performance.
What do we have next week, Kyle?
Next week we have Patch Adams.
Yes, Patch Adams. So, as always, just you want to follow us on Facebook again, but just definitely check out the other shows on Cage Club. They've had some really good stuff.
They had a great episode recently for Cage Club itself, where they got the stand-in.
Yeah, he's a stand-in for Nicolas Cage. It was an awesome episode.
Like the 90s, he was on Bringing Out the Dead, right? Isn't that, that's pretty cool.
That's very cool.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Some pictures of him as like Cameron Poe from, I know the character's name, but I'm totally forgetting the name of the movie right now. Of
Con Air.
Con Air. Yeah. And he's like, and it's him dressed as Cameron Poe, like, you know, in a mugshot. But he's just like, it's really...
Joey and Mike were really excited about this one, and it does not disappoint.
We
definitely
have many hours of conversation with this guy, so... Yeah,
definitely check it out.
Yeah.
As always, like, follow, share, subscribe.
Comment. Comment on this episode.
Yes, yes. Kyle likes the comments. I do, too.
Yes. And Anne... I let you know and how we end this, if you could.
Stay uncool.
Perfect. Stay uncool, Hoff fans.
Stay uncool, Hoff fans. See you next week.
Where did you come from, baby? How did you know I needed you? How did you know I needed you so badly? How did you know I'd give my heart gladly? Sex a thing, you. I believe in miracles.